given the time of the year, Feast of the Passover, Easter, Resurrection, all sorts of things. Echoes in the Rain with Enya. Of course, the traditional contractually obligated Enya tune that gets featured on an EKT Door appearance with respect to the Midroot Drive, either that or John Anderson.
Or one or the other.
Absolutely essential. So there I was at Scarborough yesterday doing a little recce for Sci-Fi Scarborough, and the excitement that Andy was actually saying, the sheer excitement, he could barely say, Larry Nemeczek will be in Scarborough! Yay! And I agree. You can tell your Garrett Wangs and Richard Hatton, they're all wonderful folk, Claudia Christian, etc., but it's the Larry Nemeczek! Yay! So we've built up the atmosphere. The entire segment of North Yorkshire on the coast is just beside themselves with excitement, Larry, that you will shortly be landing a week and a bit's time, so decide to squeeze it in the jaws of Scarborough.
Thank God I have you for an advanced man. Thank God I have you guys for an advanced team. Otherwise it would be Larry who? What?
Nonsense. In fact, no. Phil Leonis even took a segment of your first piece with us a couple of weeks ago and actually used it on his very own Chilpack Hollywood show to admit he had been a bit too harsh when commenting on his projected thoughts about the Star Trek series. He also claimed I said he was a bit of a downer, but that's not true. So there we are, you see, we're spreading that goodness and you know, that's
turning them one at a time. That's what it is.
It's the way forward. It's definitely the way forward. So we also should give a name check out to your good wife as well, because you're also married to Janet Nemeczek. So I just wanted to clarify that, etc. Because
yes. And Janet and I used to do conventions together. Janet worked on Voyager for 5 years.
Indeed.
Back in the day, before she left the entertainment industry, and is a fan herself when she's not being burned out by real work. With Star Trek. You know, it's like, be careful what you wish for, you may get it. Yeah. But she's coming back with me. It's been several years since I was in the UK, but it's been a long time since she was. So we're really looking forward to it. Well, it'll be awesome.
It'll be like the heart-to-heart of science fiction geekdom there, you know. All we need is something to be sort of Max the Butler. And I say that this is Janet, and she's gorgeous. You know, it's great.
You're really hot with... I heard the Hawaiian references a while ago. That you're really hot with the old American TV today.
Well, Larry, I find it's important to educate the world. And sometimes, as I said, when you sort of skip away from the joys of Harper Lee and Go Set a Watchman, which I think is not as bad as people make out, go and read it. Go and read Go Set a Watchman after To Kill a Mockingbird. They both fit together nicely. And, of course, Superman vs. Batman, Dawn of Justice. Yeah, Star Trek, Magnum P.I. and Hawaii 5-0 just slot into the package just effortlessly, Phil.
There you go. I quite thought of it that way, but I see what you mean. Yeah.
Anyway, Claire, thoughts or questions for Dr. Star Trek, the one and only Larry Nemeczek?
You know, I'd never seen Star Trek until we watched it in science fiction earlier this year. Yeah, so my eyes have been opened to a whole other world.
Yeah. I'm in shock.
Yeah. I know. I was a sheltered child. Yeah. My parents were never really science fiction-y people. But I've always sort of been aware. I think Star Trek is the sort of thing that everyone is aware of and is referenced in so many things and in so many ways. I mean, I remember seeing it was repeatedly referenced on Gilmore Girls, which is my all-time favourite TV show.
Really?
Yeah. It was, I think Luke Danes was a bit of a Trekkie when he was a kid. And that was sort of like referenced quite a lot. But I just think it's a really fun show, and I just found it really interesting. I think we got slightly sidetracked, didn't we? We just kind of watched a good couple of episodes.
There are, when you actually have the responsibility of within 12 weeks, 3 months, taking a group of folk who have an interest in science fiction, which is why they've opted to take the science fiction module for their English degree program. And I feel sometimes, much as Claire's just explained there, they haven't encountered one of the touchstones of great science fiction. Televisual, cultural, literature, and so on. Can you remember the episode I screened?
No, I can tell. Was it, they were like in a foresty sort of thing, and people kept dying, and it was very emotional.
Well, that probably won't have helped many people, but I can give Larry a couple of clues, and I'm sure he'll be able to identify it if I actually said the Maku Root, or indeed You Bewitched Me, Or indeed, it's an episode where not just McCoy, not just Spock, they all get shot or wounded in their own way.
Yes.
And it's like the Brush Wars. So what could I be referring to, Larry?
What, Private Little War?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's impressive. That is impressive.
Just a few...
You threw me there for... Yes, everybody gets shot in Private Little War.
Yeah.
One at a time.
I know.
But it's the great Vietnam allegory, right.
Yeah. A huge Vietnam allegory. In fact, I mean, some people might say in the original series that sometimes, that episode, and I think also the third season episode, Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, which is kind of race... Well, it is race relations, but it's very broad brushstroke race relations. One side black, one side white, and so on. But strangely enough, sometimes, in terms of parables, as indeed the Bible's often shown us, you can only get a message across by using large, broad brushstrokes. What do you think, Katie?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, the subtle detail that the sort of later series of Star Trek conveyed. I mean, I think The Next Generation was really ambitious in sort of the social message that it tried to put forward, which was wonderful.
And it related to that whole process. Larry, I've held this back deliberately because it's one of those things which can sort of fire off all sorts of questions. But I am, and it may just be because I'm getting more...
Don't hold back.
Be because I'm becoming more chronologically gifted, experientially enhanced, etc. But I have found myself recently not minding Spock's brain as much as I used to. I actually think it somehow... Somehow, brain and brain. What is brain?
It's brain. Well, Spock's brain is the wacky uncle of Star Trek. So, not intentionally funny, but no, everybody loves to love to hate it, but it's wacky in its own bizarre way.
Well,
yes,
in a strange way, they split up the genders. They put the male morgue on planet surface and the female eye morgue under the surface. And you've got, obviously, the notion that you can actually do brain surgery without any kind of a thing other than a screen that's actually there. And it's child's play. It's child's play. Maybe it's because I actually watched it on one of those portable tablet devices. Maybe it kind of has a new meaning for me. You know, maybe previously I've been watching it, on a screen, on another different screen, or TV set, video, etc., tablet device watching Spock's brain. Quite subtle, particularly late in the night. I thought, yes. Anyway, I just...
You can do anything if you're advanced enough.
Exactly.
Those are pretty tough force fields they have for that surgery, done just out in the open behind the screen.
Precisely. That's the key message. Moving on. Mary, questions or thoughts for yourself?
Well, we were reading an article actually earlier today about I brought it up on my phone, the Telegraph article, about Scotland Yard keeping a secret dossier on Star Trek fans that we're so cult-like in the UK.
I was going to email this to you, Larry, but I thought, no, you are sufficiently capable to be able to cope without necessarily seeing the article. But we'll give you the gist of the whole thing, which I sent to some of the team. And it effectively suggested that a year ago, it was finally revealed by the Telegraph, in fact, the Daily Telegraph, so obviously it's got a certain amount of clout from that point of view, that... British people were so concerned, or at least the British police, or MI5 in particular, were so concerned in the latter part of the 20th century about the activities of X-File fans, and in particular Star Trek fans. The headline, Secret Files Reveal Police Feared That Trekkies Could Turn on Society, that they held a secret dossier on Star Trek and the X-Files in the run-up to the millennium. They thought we were going to take over the world. Did they not realise we already have?
You mean about individual fans?
Social movement, I think.
A genuine social movement. I mean, Mary, you read the whole thing. When you first read that, did you think, what?
It was hilarious. I cried with laughter. But, very weird. Very, very weird.
I love the idea of a social movement based on the ideals of Star Trek. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. You're all for it, Katie.
Oh, yeah.
She's one of them.
For years, this is Elizabeth Roberts, the journalist who actually put this together. For years, Star Trek fans known as Trekkies, well, technically, Elizabeth, it's Trekkers, but I'm sure, Larry, you're big enough to step away from the Trekkie argument, so let's work that. We've been the butt of jokes about the penchant for wearing pointy ears and attending science fiction conventions. I can honestly say that I've never worn a pair of pointy ears in my life, actually.
I think we'll have to get you some, Alex.
Yes. Okay. Fine.
I did. I forgot. Yeah.
But the police feared British fans of the cult American show might boldly go a little too far one day. And it's emerged that Scotland Yard kept a secret dossier on Star Trek, The X-Files and other US sci-fi shows amid fears that British fans would go mad and kill themselves, turn against society or start a weird cult.
It's very extreme.
Wow.
I will email this across to you, Larry, so you can actually peruse it at your leisure after the program. But, you know, it's
Yeah, the biggest weapons of Star Trek fans are choosing a career and the ballot box. I think that's the biggest.
Exactly.
That's how they've made their mark, right?
But it's interesting. I mean, presumably the CIA are listening to this conversation at the moment and thinking, is this not in keeping with our current sort of state of play in the world universe?
Oh, I hope they decide they've got a lot worse to worry about than Star Trek. The 90s just got too fat and boring. See, that's what's going on there, the late 90s. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, if it wasn't for Star Trek, how would we have got through the decades? That's the important thing. But still, we did, and we continue to work through that process. Katie.
What's coming up soon that you're really excited about?
Apart from Sci-Fi Scarborough, of course. I mean, it's days away now.
What was that? What's coming up?
Yeah, excited.
Yeah,
about Star Trek. Oh, well, we've talked. I think I've talked with you all the last couple of weeks about the new series coming in January. Very excited for that because of who they've got working on it. I'll say this for a little. I have something exciting to add to what you know about Sci-Fi Scarborough before we get off here today. Yeah. But what's excited going? Well, I'm just excited about the 50th. There are so many. It seems like all the conventions, like Sci-Fi Scarborough, wherever they are adding, you know, it's the 50th anniversary this year, which has kind of sparked a lot of this and sparked the push for the new series and the timing of the Beyond movie, Star Trek Beyond. And I'm excited because there are these huge events like the Las Vegas convention and the one that's been added in New York, and I think there's another one added for London, the destination in London that's going to be this fall. There's the big events, but then I think every place, big and small, has been adding Star Trek. Here in the States, I've been asked to go to lots more conventions this year. I'm going to two different libraries that are having, you know, that have found budget money to have me come in. People are just focusing back on Star Trek, and you were kidding a minute ago about when we had to kind of hide ourselves and keep staying in the closet, but, you know, that's not true anymore. We live in a Big Bang Theory, you know, the geeks have won world, and we see flip-top communicators and we see pads as iPads, you know, culturally and technologically, and you can't read a new science discovery article without them starting off saying, well, you know, it's not quite up to Mr. Spock's standards, or it may have been something Mr. Scott used to experiment with, but scientists that fill in the blank have, you know, gone one step closer to a transporter or to, you know, it's the reference point, like you said. It's the reference point for everything. It's the common language, which is amazing. Even if you're not a huge fan, you're an armchair fan, you know where it is. So it's just exciting to see even these local events incorporating Star Trek like that. It just really shows you how far it's gone and what it affected. The bottom line is, what is the effect, hopefully for the good that it's had, MI5 or anyone else to the contrary, what a good effect it's had, you know, on the world.
I don't know. I suppose James Bond with James T. Kirk could be quite interesting. I mean, Kirk Bond, they could work on that. For that. By the way, but latest happy birthday to William Shatner.
Right, but a cue on James Bond is a wholly different affair.
Oh, well, indeed. Yes. Mind you, it could happen. I mean, Gary Seven, you know, certainly
Bond. And Star Trek.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Oh, we hadn't realised the other connection, of course, between one of our other regular correspondents. That would be, of course, Arthur Weingarten, producer and writer of The Wild Wild West and Murder, She Wrote and Green Hornet and so on. It was, of course, the fact that one of Arthur's best mates is a certain Mr. Harlan Ellison. Don't sue anybody today, please, Harlan. Please, don't sue another person. For goodness sakes, very litigious, we gather. But you're also involved with respect to the real story, of course, of the original script, the audiobook, no less, of Harlan Ellison's original City of the on the Edge of Forever.
Yes, well, thank you for asking about that. A couple of years ago, they made a graphic novel from his original script, you know, the very famously... The City on the Edge of Forever gets pointed to often as the most classic, the most popular episode of the original
series. He knows, Doctor.
He knows, yes.
You realize what you've just done?
All, that's all right, my dear. That's all right, because I don't
believe in
you
either.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't mean to disbelieve you, but that's hardly a naval uniform. Sorry.
Uniform. Yes.
But a Clark Gable movie. Yeah. Sorry, I could go on for that.
But again, famously, he wrote a script that was said to be unproducible. He was one of the many science fiction writers they asked him to write the first season. But his original story for what we know as The Stewardship Forever was wildly broader and a lot darker. Drug dealing in the crew of the Enterprise, an addict and a dealer both, and a couple more characters on the surface, still with Edith Keeler and still a time travel in the 1930s. But very famously over the years, Gene Roddenberry even, and other Bob Justman, other people talked about how crazy it was and how slow Harlan was to do his rewrites and all of this. And the irony is that the script that was produced won the Hugo Award, the science fiction, top award that year. But his script, as submitted originally, won the Writers Guild of America Award. So they both kind of had their way. It became a classic. But over the years, he's been very zealous about his... That's the only time he ever wrote for Star Trek, been zealous about the reputation of that script. And he's gradually, a few years ago, wrote a book. We had all the drafts of it and all his comments, his colorful commentary, and that was done as a graphic novel, and now the company he's always used for his audiobook, Skyboat Media, is indeed doing an audiobook with actors, not just one script, but they're reading all of the drafts of that script, and reading his, LeVar Burton is a narrator for most of those.
You've got Geordi LaForge, the guy from Roots, and the navigator of the Enterprise, actually there as well. Genius.
The latter-day Enterprise, yes. And then later in the process, they have some commentaries. There's commentaries from David Gerrold and from Dorothy Fontana and others. And later in the process, they asked me to do a commentary on Sitting on the Edge of Forever, which was wonderful. And then I also got to be a dying transporter chief in one of the script iterations. So there you go.
I mean, before we mention it, David Gerrold, he created the Tribbles. Triple creator. DC Fontana, This Side of Paradise, script editor for the first season. Dorothy, of course, because she had to use DC.
Right.
She didn't know what the things were, gender issues. And now Larry Nemeczek as a dying security chief. That's just... Sign me up now.
What more could you find?
Will you be bringing any over to the Spa Complex Scarborough for Sci-Fi Scarborough?
It's not released yet. There's some samples that are up on little bits on SoundCloud and online.
We shall hold fire on that one then. But
not till the summer.
As we said last week, that concrete donut, many journeys are possible. Let me be your guide. Let's get the hell out of here.
Before your sun burned hot
in space. Yeah. Since before you did. Yeah. I have awaited a question. I could have launched with that as opposed to Private Little War Cloud, but as Phil Lynn's actually, as he said a few years ago, he said, why, if you went in with that, it's just such a rich tapestry, it would just, so you might be ready now, in the studio, you might be ready, City on the Edge of Forever.
Didn't you always have the image of Spock's head going to that mechanical Chinese rice picker?
Oh. I do believe you're enjoying my predicament back there. It's a very barbaric time. An economic heaval had occurred. Yes, circuit depression. Exactly. I believe we'll go to the future in some kind of spaceship. We could go on and on. But Phil Leonis is awaiting in Los Angeles. So we need to ask those last two questions. Go, who is it? Claire, go for them.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today, Larry?
Oh, this has been one of the best ever. Yes, and the phone lines have been cooperative as well. I just did want to throw you all a little bit of a mini bombshell.
Please.
On Friday night of Scarborough.
Yes.
For Sci-Fi Scarborough, if people are there early, I'm having an informal meetup at the Crescent Hotel. It's either going to be 8 or 9 p.m., but it's going to be there in one of their lounge rooms. We're still sorting out the details. And I'm going to do a little impromptu bit and talk a little bit about Portal 47 for everybody who's there. So I just wanted to throw that up. If you're an early bird there Friday night, come by.
That's on the Friday. I know we're booked in with respect to the actual site. We might even have a word with Steve and see if we can get along there for the Friday.
How exciting.
It's just
wonderful.
It's just one joyous thing after another. So, Larry, can we prevail upon you to join us for... I mean, I feel as though this has become the Larry Nemechek part of the programme. It's become a segment. He's carved it out.
In
our routine. Will you be back with us next week? Will you be kind enough to join us next week, just literally days before, or hours before you get on the plane, to come over to this side of the Atlantic?
Actually, well, I don't know if... I mean, I would love to. I'd dearly love to, but I don't know about the beaming. Actually, this time next week, I'll be about to land.
Oh,
right. At Heathrow. So I think we left. Well, I'm mixed up, but I think I'll still be on the plane.
Let's keep it open. We'll negotiate. All we'll see things work through there. Either way, one way or the other, either in person or Scarborough, in Poisson, or somewhere in the universe, hopefully, Larry, you will return to the program.
By however we can align the subspace channels, we'll do it.
Round of applause, please.
Yay!
On islands, we all run onto islands in the sun, and the sun too is an island. With islands all around. On islands.
You're all the same. Fall on our own islands that reach out forevermore.
On islands.
Into the darkest depths of eternal space, searching.
Little child, although you're probably in your 40s now, there must be on islands new music. And we move from the island of Lincoln, as we've been through the island of Hawaii, through the island of Oahu, through island of Star Trek, to the island of lost souls. No, it's Phil Leonis Land. How are you, Phil?
I'm doing excellent, Alex. Surprised to find that you've changed your clocks, and indeed, I may have been setting down, just getting ready with my cup of coffee to start listening to some of the show, and imagine my surprise that it's already time for my favorite part of the show.
There you are. But as I mean, just in case you're wondering, you obviously catch up the joys of the podcast, as you can do, southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com, and sometimes we put it on sirenonline.co.uk, Cameron Tilbury, Gwyneth Griffiths, cosplayer extraordinaire, Tara Bennett, Ilana Rain, Larry Nemechek, and Katie, you have a big, big question you want to put to the Leonis Meister before I ask him, has he read the MI5 conspiracy theory that I did actually email him just to sort of say, have a look at this one for your truth is out there, I said. Anyway.
How are you, Phil? We missed you last week.
I'm doing excellent. Please make this a lengthy and thoughtful question while I quickly look up the link that Alex sent me.
He's on the case, isn't he? You can tell that. I mean, he's not just the director of Spectres and The Truth Is Out There and The Lady Killers. He can't just turn around and say that, all right, Gary Shandling might be in the next sort of a universe looking down and saying, I do a fantastic piece on The Lady Killers. It'll happen. It's working through it in its all sorts of ways. I mean, Mary could also consider the joys of City on the Edge of Forever, the discussion we just had with Larry Nemechek. All those sort of aspects could fall into place from that point of view. How much time do you actually need us to fill for you,
Well, I mean, nice of you to bring up Gary Shandling. I'll be talking about Gary again tonight in my acting class, because a lot of what I teach in my acting class is based upon the great and groundbreaking acting teacher Roy London, who died in 93. And I was introduced to Roy London's work through Gary Shandling. So it seems a nice way to honor him by talking about why I do what I do, and what the foundation for what I teach is, a along with, of course, borrowing, stealing from other great teachers and inspirations as well. I see links here, but I'll keep going. I can multitask. Any director can multitask. That's the job. There's 100 questions a minute that come to you as a director, and just between you and me, don't share this with anyone, right? It's just us friends, right? Of those 100 questions you get a minute as a director, 97 of them don't matter. So just give an answer. It's really, you want to pay attention to the two or three that do. Like when the producer says to you, hey, my girlfriend would be great, don't you think, to play that role? Those are the questions you want to pay attention to. Anyway, what's the question for me right now? And I will pay attention to it.
Well, I mean, ultimately, we could ask you for a comment on Elizabeth Roberts' piece from the Telegraph.
I thought there was a question in the room.
I just wanted to know that you were okay. Yes. Katie was worried about you. Yeah. We thought that he'd slipped into a morass of despair and a sort of a despond of Los Angeles fug that effectively would sort of fugued himself away from that. I think, no, he's not that sort of person. As I said, it's unusual, even though he did actually say that he goes into shades of grey, shades of darkness and all sorts of other areas. He's the Phil Dearness that we know and love and have as an anchor person at the end of the program. Anchorman 2, I did see, not impressed really. I mean, I didn't share that with Cameron in the early part of the show because I thought, okay, To Kill a Mockingbird, yes, I'd already juxtaposed that with Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. I think it's worthwhile considering. Both great in their own way. And clearly to the man who shot Liberty Valance and Sons of Katie Elder. But Anchorman 2, no, sorry.
Is Anchorman 2 the one with the journalists of all different nations doing battle?
That
seems rather good, I thought.
Did you like that?
I liked that scene.
Yeah.
That's as much of Anchorman 2 as I've actually seen.
I suppose if you just talk about that part.
Just in isolation.
I'd always seen our managing editor at Siren as being Ron Burgundy, and somehow I couldn't answer that.
So. You may say that, I couldn't possibly.
No names.
You don't understand. I'm blind. That was pretty funny. That was pretty good. I become that Ron Burgundy-esque character. You can tell I have a little bit of a nasal thing going on. When I'm sick, I mean, that is totally me. You don't understand. I'm sick. We just asked you to answer the door. I'm sick. I can relate to that a little bit.
And jazz flute as well.
I did read the article. I did actually know the article, by the way, Alex, what you sent me. I mistook what I looked at that you had sent me this morning for something interesting. I'm sorry. No, that's kind of old news, though. I don't know if people are aware of what. Did you set the stage for what you had sent me? The article that you had sent me, Alex?
We kind of talked about it with Larry, and I think he was taken a bit by surprise.
He really? Because I thought this was always old news. But maybe that's because of, different, like Gene Roddenberry had been aware of this, and I'd been part of presentations in the past. So the idea that there was a time that certain authorities were concerned that Trekkies would turn on society, which is such an interesting, almost unbelievable concept, when you think at what the values of Star Trek expresses. But really, let's face it, certain powers that be, what upsets the apple cart the most? Oh, ideas of diversity, ideas of working together to build a future where no one is left behind and everyone is able to explore their own uniqueness. Those concepts actually threaten certain power structures a great deal. So I guess I'm not surprised that people were scared, but to think that they might that Star Trek fandom might turn on society in some violent or scary way is laughable.
It's so anathema to what Star Trek stands for as well.
Exactly. Star Trek fans are not going to turn on society. Star Trek fans are going to redeem society, quite frankly.
Thank you, Phil. Sometimes when you're actually up in the pulpit on the mountain, you find it's very difficult to even identify the piece of music that Fred Stein is actually playing for us now. Have you got an idea in terms of which episode Fred Stein has actually taken this particular theme from? I could give him a major clue. What do you think, Mary? Should I give him a major clue?
Yeah, give me a clue.
Teeny tiny compressed little white balls and cubes. Teeny tiny compressed cubes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, there's two, aren't there, that kind of fit? The colored cube.
I can give you one more.
Not blink of an eye. No. It's not blink of an eye.
No.
That's the other one that I'm thinking about. Franklin Ajayi. Franklin Ajayi, the great African-American comic, did a wonderful stand-up routine about Star Trek. And he focused on this particular episode. I'm ashamed as a Star Trek fan and as a student of comedy. I'm ashamed that I don't. I know the episode. Yeah. I know the guest stars.
Warren Stevens.
I know those horrible jumpsuits stars wear.
Yeah.
Think Shakespeare. It's not Conscience of the King.
No.
That's another. Oh, by any other name.
Yes.
By any other name. You know, okay, so now you've managed to shame me on three levels. So it's mind, body, and spirit. Because not only a beloved stand-up comedy routine that I referenced about this episode, not only as a Star Trek fan, but my first student film in film school, I named by any other name, as a nod of the cap, both to Shakespeare, that guy, and of course to Star Trek. Yes. Here I am.
Five years I've taken to actually sort of reel that one out. I thought I'd pace it up there. I thought he'd hit it out of the ballpark. But no, indeed, by any other name, the calamity.
You know, part of the stand-up routine, well, I won't even get into it. Franklin Ajayi, it's wonderful. It's not suitable for the airwaves, but it's a terrific, terrific comedy routine. Anyway, well, thanks for that, Alex. I think we're out of time. A number between 1 and 22.
It's a genuine classic. That's all we have to say. And well worth sort of accessing. And you can actually see there in some of the images from By Any Other Name. Obviously, you know, that it just sort of works on everywhere. I'm not sure whether we can even allow the whole thing to sort of work our way through that. But it was a memorable season 2 episode where effectively Andromedans take over the crew of the Enterprise and reduce. Do you remember it, Katie?
No.
You can see the planet there, and there's a segment. Phil, how are the Lady Killers coming on? When can we see that? How is it happening?
There's going to be an announcement very soon about the world premiere of the Lady Killers. Very soon. It's very exciting. We're talking to different festivals about having our world premiere and then our international premiere not too long thereafter. Would like to share with you something and run a title by you that I think is I have no book for it yet, but I have a title and I think it's a winner. So at our Los Angeles Breakfast Club meeting today, we were learning about African American history during the 1910s and 1920s in early Los Angeles, and how in the 1910s. They enjoyed greater freedoms than they would just a decade later. And one of the reasons that African Americans would find a restriction on their freedoms a decade later was because of the second great wave of growth in our social fraternal organization known as the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan. And this was an apropos discussion to have at the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, because the Ku Klux Klan saw this rise in popularity at that time, in no small part to a little recruiting film known as Birth of a Nation, the first great feature-length motion picture made by David Wayne Griffith, D.W. Griffith, who was a founding member of our club. And he made this great legendary film that really inspired a huge enrollment in the Ku Klux Klan. Not only to fight the black menace, but also to fight immigration and Native Americans and so many other things, to keep America white. And I was sharing with our club that the year after Birth of a Nation, D.W. Griffith responded to the criticism leveled against the racism of his film by making a movie called Intolerance. And history has been kind to him in a way that he did not deserve, because he didn't make this movie Intolerance as a mea culpa for his own intolerance. No, it was a movie about the intolerance he felt he received from people about his own racist movie. He felt other people were intolerant to him. So he made this 3.5-hour epic movie deriding other people's intolerance that's almost unwatchable. But it's great local history because it's this enormous set, unlike any really built sense, that was built at a location right now where my favorite movie theater stands, where at the exact spot where Hollywood Boulevard begins. So I found myself saying in this presentation today that Hollywood begins with intolerance. And all of a sudden I stopped and I said, oh my goodness, I've got to share that with Alex and my friends. Is that not a great book title? Hollywood Begins with Intolerance? And here we are 100 years later, and we still have the Oscar So White controversy.
And only 300 years earlier, Galileo was having his challenges with respect to the church, as we said earlier when we were talking with Alana. 400 years ago, exactly, Galileo had problems with the church over the Copernican system. Nicholas Copernicus, on the other hand, managed to play it a lot more subtly. Mind you, he was Polish. So, jumpsuits are very good, as you
say. My book about Hollywood history and diversity is not going to have all that nerdy science and math in it.
I look forward to it,
Phil. It's amazing how you can even sort of enjoy Star Trek just as a silent backdrop to the whole thing. You see that? It's amazing. You know,
no, it'll have science and math, but I'll only have sexy science and math. My science and math will be played by Halle Berry in the movie version.
Well, Claire, a number between 2 and 26, please.
I'm just gone. 7, please.
You're gone for number 7. Good choice.
When in a hurry, step one for changing the entire world is falling in love with it as it already is. Same for changing yourself. You like the universe.
There you are, you see. Sorted.
Oh, you stopped. There was about to be a P.S. I could sense a P.S. coming. The universe always has P.S.s, and when you already start with the universe getting all touchy-feely about love yourself just the way you are, you know that the P.S. was, P.S., move closer to the window so the universe can enjoy what you're wearing.
There's no BS in
the
PS.
Universe is watching you.
Let's get this thing sorted too. Up next, glorious, wonderful music on Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. In the morning, we will be welcoming Nick Smith, the NEHS Flower Show Director from the North of England Horticultural Society show. William Sitwell will be back with us, Alan Stevens as well, from the Forest of Dean, no less, Ian Lennox and Richard Fitzwilliams. Don't think Richard's seen Superman vs. Batman Justice or Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, but I'm pleased to say, because Phil won't have acknowledged that I gave it an 8 out of 10, so good stuff there, and we managed to.
You know, the most hated movie apparently, the most hated movie apparently in history. It set, everyone thought it was going to set a box office record this weekend, that it didn't, but it set an ignominious record of having the biggest fall off in history from Friday to Sunday, because never before has there been word of mouth this bad.
I disagree, Phil. As Mary would say.
Well, you can't disagree. Suddenly you're Donald Trump. You can't disagree with you, Mr. Math and Science. You can't disagree with the actual. You disagree that it set the record for that? I mean, it's numbers, man. It's numbers.
They're obviously just savoring it until they actually can purchase it on DVD, but it's worth seeing, and I was pleasantly surprised.
That's what they're telling people. They're telling people just. You really, don't go to the theater now. Save up the money so you can buy an ultra-deluxe edition on microchip that's planted directly into your brain.
Exactly.
You'll thank us later. Yeah, okay, that's an interesting theory. Alex,
Mary.
You would make an excellent presidential candidate, and I don't mean that as a compliment. So...
In which case, Mary Dancy, the last two questions, please.
Oh, my gosh. Phil, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
I think I should be asking you all that. It seems like you've had a very interesting telephonic link with me today.
Yeah, very much so.
And will you be joining us again next week?
I will be joining you again next week on April 20th, and I'll let Alex know this. I am planning two, count them, two replacements for me on the April 20th show, one of whom might have been a longtime star of The X-Files. So there you go. But I will return
indeed,
next week.
Only a matter of days after David Cassidy's birthday and just 3 days before William Shakespeare's.
Oh, nice.
Those are the cubes. You can see Warren Stevenson holding
the
cubes.
They're not really cubes, though.
Well, they're kind of tetrahedron.
That sound. Do you hear that sound? You might need to... When people listen to this podcast and they wonder what that weird sound is, they should just know that it's Shakespeare turning over in his grave really, really quickly because he was just mentioned in the same breath with David Cassidy. Okay, good.
There you go. Thanks to Mary Dancy, Claire Margerison, and to you, good self, to yourself, and to you, Katie Dore. Back again in the near future, ladies.
Yes. Tomorrow.
Excellent. And thanks to aforementioned Cameron Tilbury, Gwyneth Griffiths, Tara Bennett, Ilana Rain, Larry Nemechek, and Phil Leonis. That's it. We're out of here. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.